This week on Potlatch, Levi Lott of Tulaksac interviews two anthropologists. Often anthropologists interview Native Alaskans. Levi Lott of Tulaksac turned the tables on two anthropologists, Gisela Dykema and Larry Naylor.
Some people criticize anthropologists that they come around and ask very personal questions and invading privacy. Is that true?
Maybe sometimes it would seem to the person who's questioned that the anthropologist tries to invade their privacy. But if it deals with some aspects of culture which otherwise would be lost to the rest of the world, you know, or lost because it cannot be written down, maybe the people should put aside their dislike and try to have their cultural or the aspects of those aspects of their culture revealed.
Larry?
Well, certainly, particularly when the anthropologist is dealing in the social relations or the social aspects of people's lives, they do get into very sensitive areas, what most people would consider their privacy. But I think you have to back up for a second and say, you know, what is it that they are trying to do? And then how does a question that can be perceived as invading their privacy or invading one's privacy, how does that relate to what the project or the purpose or the goal of those types of questions are? And I think by definition, this kind of anthropology does deal in sensitive areas, meaning this idea of privacy, the idea that someone may be getting into what you might consider as your own personal business, and surely, why does someone else want to know about my personal business? This, I think, is sensitive. Okay, not only in terms of the person, but this is true of a group, of a particular culture group. The anthropologist, in getting at questions like this, however, has in mind the goal of attempting some kind of a description, either on an aspect or the total culture itself. And in order to get at that kind of information, to be able to describe what is that culture or what is the culture you're dealing with, you have to cover everything, because anthropology is, again, by definition, concerned with the total man, not just a certain aspect of him, but we're trying to look at all of the infinite varieties of man in all of the kinds of things he does. So in order to be truly complete, you have to get into these private areas or sensitive areas. Now, the anthropologist, if he's or she is a very good professional and takes quite seriously what he's doing, it's the kind of information that he has to have to make such a description. At the same time, it's the kind of information that he's not going to pass along to everybody else. I mean, you have to look at it in the context. But it allows him to look at this total man, everything about him, every little aspect, so that he can say, all right, this is what it is. Without, you see, these little kinds of questions being answered, that's impossible to do. So you have to talk to people about private things.
Thank you.
What is cultural anthropology, Gisela?
Cultural anthropology is the study of all aspects of culture, namely learned behavior. It deals with such things as technology, with tools, housing, clothing, and also it deals with how kinship is reckoned, and religion, or the supernatural beliefs of people. It deals with everything that concerns culture, namely learned behavior.
When you go out to a village, or what do you usually teach the people?
I have been to quite a few of the villages, and we have what is called a one-credit seminar in the anthropology of the one course is the Aleuts and Eskimos of Alaska, and the other one is the Athabascan Indians of Alaska. And mostly the people who are in these one-credit courses are teachers or people who have come to the village. But I have been very fortunate in that each time I have taught one of those courses, we did have some natives, or native people of the area in the courses, and they contributed a lot to the seminar. And we all learned from them, while they also learned something about anthropology.
How many villages have you gone to too far?
Let's see, I have been to Barrow, to Nome several times, to Kotzebue, to Bethel. And then, I don't know if you want to call Healy a village, and to Delta and to Fort Greeley.
Which ethnic group here in Alaska do you study?
I teach about all of the ethnic groups here in Alaska, namely the Aleuts, Eskimos, and the Athabascan Indians, including the Tlingits and the Haidas. Personally, I have done some research on the Koyukon Indians, and also on the King Island Eskimos. And I'm very interested in the groups at St. Lawrence Island, because I had occasion to go there one time. This always helps.
One of the things I am really quite concerned with in the state of Alaska, as I think everybody is these days, but is impact of the pipeline, what this is going to mean to the groups who live in the state of Alaska. And this is a state of culture diversity. And my concern is that this impact and the reaction to it, not only in terms of government officials, but just everyday living reactions, are based or will be based on a sort of false grouping.
What do you mean by false group?
Generalities. In other words, because the pipeline impact might have a certain kind of economic impact, that sort of generalizing this across all of the culture diverse groups that we do have in the state of Alaska. I am an applied anthropologist. This means I attempt to put what I've learned, my concepts, the methods of anthropology, the perspective of anthropology, to the solution of everyday problems, practical problems in the real world. And indeed, I believe that anthropology can help. It can help soften the blow, to ease the impact of contact, and especially the massive kind of contacts that are happening with the pipeline and the oil project in the state of Alaska. The impacts aren't just on cities. They're on small communities, they're on native communities, and they are felt differently in each one of those. I don't think anyone would maintain that the Athabascan groups are all similar. Indeed, they share a certain amount of cultural heritage, but each community has its own specific history and its own experiences to draw from. And the same thing is true with the Eskimo. Certainly, the people in the lower 48, when you say Eskimo, they all envision the Eskimo as one group, as all doing the same thing, all right, speaking the same languages and so on. And indeed, this is not true. I mean, you have different languages in Eskimo. You have different groups, you see. They're not all just, quote, Eskimo. You have the northern, you have the Inupiaq, you have the southern, and so on.
Yupik.
Yupik, okay.
I'm a Yupik.
Sorry about that. You see,
don't forget me, I'm a
Yupik. All right. This is the diversity I'm talking about, the differences. In other words, there isn't just the native Alaskan. That really means there are a lot of different native Alaskans, different groups. You don't share the same values, beliefs, traditions, history. And these things, from my opinion, see, have to be considered in any kind of program.
When you study certain groups, do you, like here in Alaska, a lot of them have verbal history. Do you use their verbal history along with your
I go
study?
First of all to the books and collect whatever I can from written, you know, accounts, and then I ask the older people. I have done some research on shamanism, and I was very fortunate to talk to a King Islander who still knew a great deal, or had heard a great deal from his parents and his grandmother, who was a shaman, and therefore could give me a lot of information.
What about the folklores, myths, and oral traditions?
This is a way of getting at such things as culture history, and it is a way of getting to some subjects or topics that perhaps have been lost because they've been forgotten. If you go at the folklore of a group of people, or their myths, or indeed their oral traditions, many times you can pick up the bits of evidence or the bits of history that allow you to reconstruct the story of their historical development. And as pointed out already, certainly this is one very valuable means of the anthropologist in terms of technique or how he gets his material. And this is one good way of doing it. And certainly in the state of Alaska right now, this is an important area of research. And I think not just of the professional, but certainly in terms of the groups themselves located about the state, that there is this concern that as the older people die, many of the stories, many of the historical events that are recorded in those stories will be lost. And certainly I would like to see more anthropology being done with folklore and mythology and oral traditions, not only by the anthropologists, but certainly by the people themselves. Recording these stories, getting them down now before they are lost, because it's a very important part of heritage, history. And that's what we are and who we are.
From my experience, and I come from a small village, when somebody from outside comes in and start asking questions, they tend to hold back. Do you feel if you get some native student or native person to go out to these certain villages and record for you, how does that sound to you?
Well, I have found that sometimes you get a very idealistic view of what supposedly has happened. Namely, for instance, if I should write now about the Germans, well, I don't want them to look bad. You know, I want them to look good. So I would stress the good things, and the things which I would consider not so good, you know, I just sort of leave out. And I think this is a tendency with all people. So that when a native person, or a person native to a certain village, goes in there and wants to collect all the information, all the stories, it's just human nature that they leave out things which they feel It may only be in their own mind, but they feel, well, this is not so complimentary. You know, people may take a dim view of that or may interpret it wrongly, and so they leave that out. This is sometimes the danger I feel you run into if you have rely strictly on a native person to give you. And I don't mean just Alaskan natives, any, you know, native of a certain group.
What's your opinion on that?
Everyone has an idea of what their culture is. Everyone. If you were to ask me about my culture, I would tell you, just as you would tell me if I asked you. Unfortunately, no one member of a society or culture walks around with all of that cultural material in his head. He has only certain aspects of it, parts of it. You will, as Ari pointed out, tend to speak of the idealisms, the ideal presentation of the culture. In other words, you have a rule in your head that says you will do this or you do that. Now, in point of fact, when that's translated into behavior patterns, that always isn't true. There may be a variation on that rule. Okay, when the outsider comes in to an area and looks at the culture, he does it as an outsider. In other words, he's not inside the culture to the extent that he is clouded by the idealisms. In other words, he has the ideal in his head. And this is one of the basic reasons why anthropologists are valuable contributors. You see, they go in as the outsider. Now, if you take a native-trained anthropologist, while they can be very effective, they will have their limits because they're inside that culture, and they carry those idealisms. All right? And this is not what you're trying to get at. You're trying to get at what is the culture. So the anthropologist, he may not know any more, or let's say he won't get as close to the real culture, perhaps, as that real culture is. But he'll be closer than any one individual who walks around and says, this is what my culture is. Because he's doing it from the outsider's point of view. So a native trained anthropologist can be extremely effective to a point. And then there is the point at which he can't be because he's a member of it. I would like, frankly, to train as many native anthropologists as possible. And certainly in all my research, I have utilized and trained myself people to assist me. Without the benefit of college courses and what have you, I think people in communities can be given the types of information, the methods and techniques, to the level at which they could utilize them effectively and gather some really fine information. So I would say yes, you know, let's do it. But at the same time, I think it has to be kept, I think, or made quite clear that the anthropologist, because he's an outsider, can see things that maybe we can't see, and because we're inside.
I've recently become interested in adult cross-cultural education, and I feel that here in Alaska, maybe this is a quite a wide open field. It's very important for the adult and the older Native people, or Native and non-Native, to realize the importance of education and continuing education so they can transmit that to the younger people. The Office of Academic Outreach can offer just about any course requested in a one-credit course, namely 15 hours of instruction, requested by any group of people or any village. They are able to secure an instructor, and as long as the group or village is ready to put up the money to ship the instructor and materials out there and put him up or put her up and pay the salary, then they can deliver just about any course, such as if a village would like a course in accounting, a one-credit course just of basics in accounting, which is very important right now, or anthropology, or archaeology. We can provide any of these instructions.
Gisela Dykema and Larry Naylor. Now Alaska Senator Ted Stevens reviews some of his testimony during the oversight hearings on implementing the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act.
The Alaska representatives who testified at these hearings, including Sam Keto, who's the president of the Alaska Federation of Natives, Cecil Barnes, Willie Hensley, Nelson Angapak, Ray Christensen, and a great many others, including Dale Bondurant, who spoke for the sportsman, I think covered the issues very well. We're very concerned, I am particularly, over the great amount of litigation that has been brought into the courts over the interpretation of Alaska Native Land Claim Settlement. One lawyer in Interior alone has 80 suits that he's supposed to be working on, and I have urged that the committee consider setting up a binding arbitration procedure to try and resolve some of these conflicts without extensive litigation. I'm also worried about the problem of public easements. I do believe that the BLM needs to have a procedure for public awareness. I think that the Act gave the Secretary of Interior the duty to reserve those areas that are necessary for recreation and public purposes, and I have suggested that the state be designated as the entity to present to the Secretary of Interior the suggestions for the public easements and recreation easements for the whole state of Alaska. There also has to be some interpretation made of the of 7I, which is the revenue sharing provision that requires one region to distribute to the other 11 a portion of the income that's received by that regional corporation. This involves a great problem of valuation and taxation and designation of what is income under that provision. I here think again that there ought to be a compact between the 12 regional corporations, which would be binding upon the Internal Revenue Service and the state of Alaska, so that there won't be a great flood of litigation over that section too.
Senator Stevens reports on supplemental appropriations for Alaska projects.
We have some funds in this new bill for the enforcement of the 200-mile zone. The amount is $12 million to start the procedure both to organize the councils and to get the monies for the Coast Guard to bring back into service both airplanes and vessels that are needed for the Coast Guard to enforce the 200-mile limit. We've got $400,000 to design the new Bureau of Land Management District office in Fairbanks and $250,000 to design the Nome Hospital, the new Nome Hospital, and the committee agreed to add the monies that are necessary to carry out the commitment for grants to the Native Regional Village Corporations under the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act. Also, we've added funds for medical contract care, and the committee approved my language to allow funds already appropriated to be switched from design to construction for the Akiak School and from operation to maintenance for the Barrow School.
Stevens reports on Rural Electrification Administration loans to improve communications in the bush.
I'm told that the EPA, the REA is looking into the possibility of a loan to a cooperative telephone organization in the Kotzebue area. The money could be used to establish a regional phone system in that area, the first such system in rural Alaska. There's a total of 1,084 telephones included in this proposal for individual homes over a total area of 36,000 square miles around Kotzebue and particularly into the surrounding communities. And we're on our way with a Bush satellite program. It will be possible to provide quality long-distance circuits in and out of over 100 rural communities. And the next step is to tie these individual homes in these areas into the earth station so that we can use rural telephones. Now, the Rural Telephone Cooperative could work. We've understood the REA is leaning towards this type of a project, and I've told the REA that I strongly support this type of project in Alaska. Many rural Alaskans need their own telephones, and I hope that we'll be able to get them telephone serviced in this way.
Senator Stevens next comments on BIA funding for Alaska.
The BIA proposed to the committee that these funds be reprogrammed outside, and I've insisted that the funds be used first in Alaska, and the committee has agreed with me. These were funds that were originally made available for other areas in the state, and the BIA schools at Kotzebue, Kalskag, and Shaktulik will get funds for improvements and design with these reprogrammed funds, and Kotzebue will get $350,000 for a new sprinkling system. The Kalskag and Shaktulik will get the remaining monies for the design of new schools. This is, I think, a very worthwhile project, a series of projects that the committee has agreed with me on. Once money is appropriated for use in Alaska for BIA schools, that should be kept there to meet the needs in Alaska and not reprogrammed outside.
The Voting Rights Extension Act originally was designed for minority groups who need voting instructions written in their own language. Senator Stevens felt this act did not meet the voting needs of Alaska Natives.
I was concerned that this act could require the state to provide ballots and election materials for those who are from the native groups that have had a traditionally unwritten language, but it is a language, although it's now been written through action by the University of Alaska, virtually no one from the native group involved can read the previously unwritten language. The printing of these ballots would be an unnecessary expense because of the problem that all of the ballots must be printed for each of these native groups, but none of them really can read those languages. Now, again, we're talking about those traditional unwritten native languages that have been in use in various portions of our state. We did get an exception for the historically unwritten languages in the one section of the bill. However, in the section that applies to the printing of ballots and election materials, the Senate was unwilling to accept the amendment then. I think that the things that have occurred since that time have proved to the Senate that we were right, and I feel we've been working very closely with Lieutenant Governor Lowell Thomas Jr. on this. I think that when we get the chance to bring this up in the Senate, that the Senate will in fact now exempt printing of ballots for a minority that has a language which was traditionally unwritten but may now be written through the action of academic circles or some of the missionary groups. But the printing of those ballots in those languages would assist nobody. As a matter of fact, it's apparent that because of the extreme cost of printing in so many different languages that we might even lose our voting right voters booklet, which has been very very good for the voters in Alaska, I think, to know who they're voting for or against.
Stevens said he checked into a rumor that Housing and Urban Development plans for 500 units of Alaska's native housing were being canceled.
Well, I did contact the Department of Housing and Urban Development, and Secretary Carla Hills has now written to me to assure me that there will be no cancellation. However, she has explained that there has been a delay in funding these housing units has been caused by cost control and by the problems of construction supervision in the program in the past, and the department is trying to avoid these problems for the future. I did contact Carla Hills immediately when I heard this. It was really just a rumor. There are definite schedules to proceed with the program as soon as HUD feels it has these special problems, both the cost and construction supervision problems, in hand.
Alaska Senator Ted Stevens. This is Jeff Kennedy. Thanks for listening. Potlatch is produced by KUAC under Title I of the Higher Education Act.